This episode of Sessionable is brought to you by Dave's Travel and Events Group, voted Best Tour and Transport Operator in the New South Wales Tourism Awards. If you want to know why they're award-winning, why not check out one of their great beer experiences, like their Rocks Pub Walk, which is a historical walking tour with a twist, the twist being beer, of course. Walking tours are pretty awesome to begin with, and adding beer to the equation makes it awesomer, so it's really worth checking out. To book your tour today, go to daves.com.au.
Sessionable.
Welcome everyone to Sessionable. I'm Adrian, and today we're covering a couple of big recent news items. And I'm here today with Tom.
Hello.
And joining us is Pete from Wayward.
Hey, thanks, Adrian.
And we thought we'd get you on today, Pete, to discuss these two topics because you kind of have your hands in a few different pies.
Sure.
And you're an IBA board member?
That's right, yeah. So yeah. I've joined the IBA board around 6 months ago, maybe a little bit longer than that,
yep.
And heading up the government advocacy, so all the excise stuff that's come out is out of that pillar of our works, and also on the SEAL committee.
Cool.
That brought up the SEAL.
Awesome. Yeah, so that's they're the two sort of topics we thought we'd talk about today, both to do with the IBA and big news in Australian beer. The recently announced and revealed IBA independence SEAL.
Yep.
And the recently announced sort of excise reforms in the next federal budget.
Yeah.
Both very exciting things that, and we thought we'd get you on to talk them through with us.
Yeah, sure. Well, do you want to start with the SEAL?
Yeah, let's start with the SEAL.
Okay.
We've talked about it a bit on the show just as the news has sort of filtered out over the last couple of months, but sort of tell us where it came from and sort of what the process was behind.
So we following on the introduction of the US Brewers Association SEAL, we'd already had the idea, but I think, you know, that really triggered us into action. So we formed a committee within the board, which was myself, Will Tatchell, Steve Jeffers, and Derek Hales. That was kind of put together at the last. We got together, I think, 20 breweries that were, you know, we felt were, you know, substantial breweries at the last conference, and got everybody in a room and really gauged the appetite for doing something like this. And the support was, you know, universal.
Yep.
Everybody supported the idea of doing this. So that gave us a lot of energy to go ahead and start the process.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So the SEAL is available to IBA member breweries to put on their packaging and in their promotions.
Yeah, there's two versions of the SEAL. One is the full SEAL, which is available to IBA member breweries that sign the license agreement. It doesn't cost anything for them to sign up. They just basically have to sign up to the license agreement, which says that they're going to use the SEAL in the way that is recommended in the guidelines. And then there's a supporter SEAL. So the supporter SEAL can be used by anyone.
Yeah.
So if you're an accounting company that specializes in servicing craft breweries, you could use that on your marketing to say you're a supporter. A pub or any sort of venue can use that on all of their marketing materials saying that you're a supporter of independent beer.
Yeah.
So I imagine you guys would be doing that.
We absolutely will. We're talking about it at the moment because that's all we sell. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we wanted to create something that was very easy for people to take up. You just need to you download it from the website, and by doing so, you agree to the terms and conditions that are on the website.
Yep.
And those are pretty sensible and basic. It's just, you know, we don't want people using it to denigrate other products. Mm-hmm. We want it to be using to support independent beer.
Yep.
And that's essentially what the terms and conditions are all about. So anybody, we already have, I think we're up to about 40 or 50 breweries that have actually been licensed already.
Yeah, fantastic.
So that's amazing.
Yeah, that's really good.
I think one of the big positive bits of news that came out of the launch of the SEAL was that, you know, within something like 24 hours or within 48 hours, 24 brewers had signed up, or maybe within 24 hours, 12 brewers had signed up to the IBA.
Yeah.
And I think that's pretty telling of how important small brewers find this kind of this marker of independence and how it can help them.
Yeah, we're putting a big push behind it. I mean, these things live and die on how well you implement them and how well you execute it in the marketplace. So we already have small tap talkers, right, that bars and venues can stick behind their decal. That's any independent decal that's licensed, you can stick this little tap talker, and that's just going to start a conversation. Yeah. Oh, what's that all about? And also, we've got little stickers that that off-prem can put, you know, on their shelf talkers.
Yep.
We've got, again, shelf talkers that actually, you know, the little wobblers that come out that can actually be used by the venues. And all that stuff is stuff that the IBA is actually paying to produce. It's available for nothing to the venues.
Yeah, because I know there's been a bit of... I've seen a bit of criticism online over a few things that I disagree with, and I'm sure you saw me on CBC, Pete. I was arguing with a lot of people quite a bit about it. And they were mostly consumers who I think weren't fully across how it is being implemented by the breweries.
I think I was surprised that there was brewers.
I did, yeah. There were a few, not a lot, but a few.
And you know, it's sort of, I guess, semi-professionals or you know, people who are thinking about making the jump. I mean, at the lower end, I think membership to the association costs $1,000 a year.
Yeah.
It's not expensive, and I think even a brewery in planning is less than that.
Yeah.
So it really is not a significant investment, and it's something that, you know, although I'm a volunteer, all the directors are volunteers, we still have costs. You know, we still have to have things designed. We have to
produce those
things.
The tap talkers and the shelf talkers
That. We've got an administrative office. We just hired a CEO.
Yeah, of course.
So, you know, all those things to be a professional organization and to organize things and to achieve things costs money.
Yeah.
It's the simple fact of life. And somebody's got to pay for that. And if you don't want to be a part of an association, then quite frankly, you got to shut up. I mean,
if
you don't want to be part of it, then fine, but don't criticize from the sidelines.
Exactly. And I think the other part of that is people, you know, criticizing from the sidelines, saying the seal is only available to members, so you have to pay to access it. But the thing is, it's not like you're trademarking independence as a concept, right? Like, anyone can put on their thing that they are independent. They just can't use this seal unless they're an IBA member.
Correct. It's you know, you look at every other sort of seal of provenance, whether it be fair trade coffee or organic or, you know, all of those things require you to be a member of an association and either pay for licensing it or pay to be part of the association, just recognizes the fact that the only way that we can work together is if we work together.
100%. And I think the IBA is, it's a worthwhile thing to be a member of if you're an independent brewery in Australia. Like it makes sense.
And like I said, if somebody doesn't feel like $1,000 is worth it.
Don't pay it.
Well, I mean, and maybe we're getting onto the next subject now, but you know, next year, those brewers are going to benefit from the lobbying we've done. Us and, you know, it's not purely us. It's been a long history of lobbying.
Lots of predecessors and
correct.
Other organizations. And,
I'm certainly not trying to take credit for everything, but, you know, it happened on our watch.
Yep.
It was as a result of lately of a lot of lobbying and we've been guiding that and creating economic impact studies that show what a reduction in tax will do in the economy. And that's, you know, quite frankly, what's convinced the government that that this is a worthwhile thing to do. And that's never been organized before.
No. And I think, there's been years and years of lobbying by, lots of other organizations, predecessor organizations and others. And, but it's finally gotten somewhere, and that's I think
and look, I'm the first to say it is just a start. So in our modeling of this, we modeled a couple of scenarios. And what we showed in the analysis is that the more excise relief you give small brewers, the more we will put back into the economy. Yep. And the more taxes will get paid. Mm-hmm. So we could actually show that, based on spending trends across our membership, that extra $350,000 would go into capital investment, into paying, growing, hiring new people, and that the net result of that for $350,000 was, I believe, the government would make another $25 or $50 million in revenue over what they've paid in the excise relief. So it's a net cash creator for the government.
So just to rewind, we're moving on to the second topic now, the excise reform recently announced by the Treasurer in the federal budget, which came in two parts, right? The refund on the excise paid, right? Which is $350,000, was it?
No. So it's currently $30,000. We currently get $30,000, mm-hmm. which is a rebate after we've paid excise. So we have to pay the excise. And then
you get the rebate.
And then we claim up to 60% of our contributions mm-hmm. in tax back at the beginning of the year. So we have to spend the money first. Well, have to give the government the money and then they give it back.
Yep.
So what the Treasurer has announced is that as of July next year, that's 2019, that'll go up to $100,000. So it's an extra $70,000, which is absolutely welcome. Mm-hmm. It's better than a kick in the bum with a frosty boot.
Absolutely.
As my grandfather used to say. And then the second half of that, of course, is...
The container size.
Correct. Yeah. Kind of rectifying... the container size, ridiculousness.
As someone who's mostly worked in the hospitality side, and again at a bar with bars with lots of rotating taps, if I could have 30-liter tap kegs on more often, it would just good. Be so good.
I mean, kegs literally weigh more than me, and I have to change them. pretty regularly.
Well, that's it. There's no H&S, and we've spoken about that on the podcast before, and it's something that I wasn't expecting anytime soon, but when I saw that, I got very excited.
So the excise concessions have reduced from 48 liters to eight liters, I believe.
Yeah, I think it's eight.
I think it's containers above eight.
So
are all taxed the
it'll
same.
Pretty much cover 10 liter, 20 liter, and 30 liter kegs now, rather than just 50 liter kegs.
Yeah. So again, this is something that we explained to the government that would actually cost them nothing. Yeah. So nobody. Currently, I won't say nobody, but it's such a small percentage, it's not even worth acknowledging. Nobody uses smaller than 50-liter kegs because it's just not economical. No. Nobody can pay for the beer. So actually, in allowing that, they're not actually losing any money. Breweries and pubs are just gaining a more flexible package
Absolutely.
Size, really. Anything like... A 25-liter keg or a 30-liter keg is a perfect size, mm-hmm. The tall, thin ones will fit in behind a restaurant service area.
Yep.
So it's
and it kind of opens it up for like those smaller venues or more kind of or less craft beer focused venues like restaurants.
Mm.
And I think I remember being in Tokyo in Kyoto recently in Japan, being in a really cool beer pub called Takumiya, and they were rotating through like 20 liter kegs every half hour.
And they even have kegs down to like 5 liters. It's crazy. Yeah. Like these little tiny restaurants have tiny little kegs.
Because sometimes just a 50 liter keg is
it's too much.
Well, even for the big pubs, like if you get an Imperial Stout or like slower moving styles like Imperial Stouts or Saisons, and you get in a 50, it'll take weeks, sometimes months to get through that. And that's bad for the beer. And if you get it in a 20 rather than a 50,
You're buying more beer. Yeah, you're going through more beer as well.
You can rotate through that.
The interesting thing will be to see whether 8 liters becomes something that could be sold directly to consumers.
Mm, like kind of like corny, like not corny kegs, but like,
Party kegs,
a really big growler, like those
Heineken
like
kegs,
German,
the Heineken ones,
yeah.
So That's a reasonable size to stick in the fridge. Yeah. And, you know, if you have a CO2 cartridge in there that keeps it carbonated, then, you know, that could become a really...
It could be a possibility.
And potentially better for the beer than growlers.
Absolutely. Yeah, it would be a lot better because it's packaged. It'd be packaged in the brewery.
Yep.
So we just need, like, we need somebody out there to create...
An easy to use system for that.
That's not specific to any one brewery. Because what was the one that Lion brought out?
Tap King or
It was Lion,
which,
was it?
Which died pretty quickly.
There was actually I think Radio Brews News had an interview with one of the guys at Lion who worked on that as a bit of a post-mortem recently. I read the article based on it. It was very interesting of just like why it didn't work. And
I think one of the reasons was that it was, you know, specific to them.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, if there was these sort of super growlers that could be brought into a brewery and filled at an economical rate, same as keg beer, then, you know, it could open up a whole different market.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
I think like one of the criticisms from a couple of brewers, which was kind of surprising, from the excise reform, was that, you know, nobody has access to these 20-30 liter kegs because they've got a whole fleet of 50s historically.
Yeah.
And it would cost them X amount of money to invest in that. And so they won't end up making too much money using...
It's funny. I get the same. We got the same criticism on the seal. It was sort of like, oh yeah, but I'm going to have to put this on my labels now. Well, that's kind of the point.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, I mean, I don't think any consumer's expecting them to be on labels today. Yeah. But it's, you know, next time you print off a thing of labels,
it costs you to create new plates.
Yep.
For your, but you know, in the scheme of things, again. You know, new plates for a beer label are probably in the order of, you know, $300 or $400. Right now, you've got lots of brands, but do it over time. You know, do it with your most popular ones and the ones that you want to get it out there. We've done it for all of ours.
Yeah.
Right. So we jumped in and just done a reprint. I mean, we needed to do a reprint, so we were holding off until literally the day it was announced. And we were right on top of it too. We knew exactly where it was going to go, so we're getting all of our labels reprinted.
Yep.
I mean, our boxes are going to take longer, but you know, we'll just wait until it's
slap a sticker on the box.
Yeah exactly. And you were mentioning the Tap Talkers. We're at Wayward right now, we're at the bar, and you've got all the Tap Talkers along the bar already, which is excellent. You know, it's great to see. I think Adrian, you took a photo of that.
That'll be on the Instagram.
And at Gabs, you know, everybody that I know that signed up is you know, going to have, you know, just a poster with the seal on it.
Yeah.
You know, Steve Jeffers has been, you know, has done so much work on this. It's been quite incredible. And just to see the support he's been able to garner from both breweries and from retailers. So, you know,
but I've seen he's already put the seal on, I think, his next can release.
Yeah.
The Stomping Ground.
Yeah.
And so, I think going back to the excise reform and the criticism of, like, you know, nobody has access to 20-30 liter kegs. People do have access to 20 and 30 liter kegs.
Kegstar.
If they use Kegstar.
Kegstar.
And
that's right.
I'm sure that Kegstar will increase their fleet of those size kegs now that the reforms are underway.
That's right.
So I think some of those comments have been really self-serving and not kind of seeing the industry as a whole.
I just find it difficult to believe that somebody, an independent brewer out there, would think that this is a bad thing. You know, both the seal and
any excise reform.
And the excise reform with kegs. I mean, getting more flexibility nobody's stopping you from using 50s, right? But if you don't see the value in using 50s, if all you do is, you know, fast moving brands that nobody's going to want to put a pale ale in it.
And like, I know as a bar with, you know, 20 rotating taps, there are beers that I absolutely do not want 30 liters of because I'll be changing them every day.
Correct.
Like I want 50 liters of some of our fast movers.
That's right.
I think a lot of the criticisms I've noticed seem to be sort of like saying, oh, it doesn't go far enough, but I still don't really get that as a criticism, because if it doesn't go far enough, does that mean we shouldn't have done anything at all?
Both the
seal or the or the excise. They're sort of like, you know, it's not perfect. So we certainly want
to go further with mm-hmm. with excise reform. I mean, this is just the start. You know, we've got another year until it's introduced.
Yeah.
So we'll be asking the treasurer or whoever is treasurer. the bookies have Labor as a better than even chance mm-hmm. for next year, right? And Albo has been the most vehement supporter of
absolutely.
This.
Absolutely. I feel like this it's really interesting watching this become it seems to have fairly broad bipartisan support, craft beer tax relief, basically.
Well, yeah, I think that's it hasn't always been that way.
No, that's why.
It hasn't I think there's been a few, key breweries, particularly ones in Scott Morrison's mm-hmm. own electorate, that have done a really good job at talking to him directly and getting him on board with the whole idea. And, thank goodness he's really bought into it. That's great. But, you know, next year, I think, all bets are off in terms of, will that be the end?
Yeah.
I think we want to be pushing for, because we think there's a positive ROI for the government mm-hmm. in supporting it to a higher degree.
Yeah.
So we're going to be saying, yep, that's great, but let's see how far we can take this.
I also think, these two changes, some brewers are afraid that it'll introduce more brewers to the market, but what if the result of introducing more brewers to the market means they will be in more councils that will be, more supportive of independent brewers?
Yeah.
Like more breweries
and
in the market.
That will lead to better excise reform.
Yeah. More breweries in the market is a scary thing. There's already a lot, and it's already hard to get your beer
correct.
In front of a lot of consumers. But it's also not an entirely bad thing having more breweries in the market.
It's competition, right?
The market will have as many breweries as it can sustain.
Correct.
And if more breweries open than the market can sustain, then unfortunately some will have to shut down, and it'll even itself out. But
the fact of the matter is that any reduction in your cost base means that breweries can operate
yep.
A lower cost base, which means they're more competitive
mm-hmm.
Against the big boys.
Yep.
So, fundamentally, you have to remember the argument that we've always used about excise reform has been that this is kind of more of a leveling of the playing
yep.
field between the big and the small brewers, because whilst, 70,000 or hopefully 350,000 means a hell of a lot to us,
yep.
it means nothing to the big boys,
yep.
right? So they just swallow that. Because they get this yeah, excise.
But only well. Once, yeah. right?
So that's like, right.
Lion Nathan gets it once, not...
So, correct. And, it means that many, many breweries are getting it, lowering our cost base. We should be able to deliver more competitive beer. We should yep. be able to increase our volumes.
Mm-hmm.
So all these things are good for driving demand,
yep.
right? Creating more demand because, ultimately, I don't believe in handouts. Right, I believe in growing the market. If we can grow the market, then that can sustain
yep.
more brewers, and it's a more sustainable thing than giving a handout to somebody.
Of course, yeah.
So, look, will it create more brewers? Maybe it will. I don't know if it's going to accelerate it dramatically.
I mean, growth is already pretty insane.
It is.
I don't know if it's going to change it too much.
Yeah. So I think that we are getting ahead of where we are from at a market share level
mm-hmm.
in terms of the number of breweries. I mean, I think that if you look at it per capita and per point of market
yeah.
share, we've got more breweries than Portland or,
yeah.
or San Diego. So,
which is pretty crazy.
It's kind of crazy. And I mean, those people pull out those two as crazy beer markets, but they both have more than 50% penetration yeah. or take up of craft beer.
On a sort of a real level, as the owner of a brewery, do you think this will affect the price that you sell your beer at, or are you looking at sort of just taking it and investing it back in? And if you don't want to say,
oh no, look, I'm happy. Yeah. It's at the end of the day, you've got revenues and costs.
Yep.
Okay, so this is effectively reducing our costs by $70,000 a year, or mm-hmm. will next year, you know,
yep.
in the next financial year coming. But you know, that's about a month's worth of excise for yep. us. So it's not
a massive.
It's not, you know, it's good.
It helps.
It's
good. Everybody
good.
Helps.
I mean, yeah. I'm not going to kick it back, but it's not a massive amount, right? Mm-hmm. And you do have to pay it before you get it back. So look, I hope that people use this
and pass
to
it on.
Expand.
Yep. Oh, to
well,
expand. Yeah.
To, you know, to expand. Yep. Look, but everybody's got to make a decision mm-hmm. as to the price of beer. I mean, at the moment, the price that craft beer is going, I don't know how people are doing it, right?
Yep.
Because I know ourselves, we may generate a profit some months, but it's not every month. And we know that we're at the premium end of the marketplace. Yep. So people selling kegs for $200 ex GST, I have no idea how they're doing it mm-hmm. because we certainly can't.
I think as well, like it is up to the brewers to decide how to, you know, spend that potentially extra $70,000. But I think however they spend it, like if you decide to increase efficiencies and make better beer, it's better for the consumer.
100%.
If you decide to, hire an extra person, it's better for the economy. If you do decide to decrease the price, it's better for the consumer. Like everything has a benefit for the industry.
Yeah, and you know, reducing the price ultimately should bring more people into buying craft beer, right? Let's face it. You know, some people still believe that it's, you know, it is a more expensive product than industrialized beer, right? So if the price is a little bit lower, perhaps brings more consumers in. It grows the market. So kind of no matter how it works out,
it's good for the consumer.
It's good for the industry. It can't be bad for the industry.
No.
You know, we're just going to have to, as an industry, ride out this coming consolidation that's going to have to come mm-hmm. because not everybody's going to survive.
No.
You know, especially if we have a recession. Hopefully we don't. But you know, if people tighten their belts a little bit and then, you know, that might drive people back to industrialized beer.
I mean, craft beer is a luxury product. And, you know, it's a luxury that I think everyone at this table makes the decision that we're willing to pay for it.
Yeah.
But that's not true for every consumer.
I think that's an important distinction, though, that, you know, it's especially in terms of the seal, it is letting people make that decision in a more informed way rather than, you know, I have no idea who owns what.
Yeah.
You know, James Squire might be independent. I don't know. You know, and people will know or hopefully will know better
We've already had, you know, commitments from some of the big retailers. They haven't announced it, so I won't say who we're talking about, but you can make guesses.
Sure.
That they are very, very strongly going to support this initiative to the point where they will have, you know, fridges that will be only independent beer. They will have a big independent beer seal on the front of the fridge and only products bearing
Excellent.
The seal will be in that fridge.
That's actually really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, people who like the idea of supporting small business and mm-hmm. independent brewers will just go to that fridge and they'll go, right, I'm going to limit my selection to these two fridges that have the seal because I don't want to be, you know, fooled or under, you know, some impression that a beer is independent when it's not.
Yep.
And we know that there's lots of beers still trying to look crafty.
Of course. And I mean, and that's the, you know, the big sort of motivation behind what happened last year with the big buyouts that we saw.
Yeah.
Is that those larger companies, they want a slice of our market, our
Correct.
industry, and they're not getting it with the brands they already have, so they went and they looked for brands that had that.
And you know, I'm the first to say that, you know, I'll still enjoy a Pirate Life or a Four Pines or a 100%. Feral from time to time. You know, I still like those guys. They're still mates.
Yep.
and they still make good beer.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah.
So this is not about something to say this beer is better than that beer. This is just for people who want to say, look, I'd like to buy an independent beer. They still have to like the beer. It still has to be good beer. Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's just another thing to help people say, it's like fair trade coffee.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want my coffee picked by children, you know? So I want to get fair trade coffee where people are getting a fair price for the coffee. Right. So I'll pick that with the logo. Right. It's like, I know I'm paying a little bit more, but it makes me feel better.
Yeah. And you know, it's just giving more information for consumers to make an informed choice. And that's important.
It's really all that's about.
Yeah. I was in a bottle shop yesterday and, you know, one of the big bottle shops, and I looked at the fridge and, you know, I personally knew which beers were independent and which weren't, but they were all mixed together, all in the same fridges.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And as a regular consumer, you know, how would you tell? Like, there was no way to tell, really.
No.
And to make it even worse, you know, what was independent yesterday might not be independent tomorrow.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah.
So, you know, we have rules in the guidelines. That's the other, you know, sort of question I've had is, well, what happens if you get bought out? There's rules in the guidelines as to how you handle that. And, you know, nobody has to destroy a beer that's out in the marketplace. Of course, that'd be a sin.
Yep.
But, you know, you absolutely, once you stop being a member of the IBA, you have to stop using the seal.
Yep. Mm. That's which is
packaging any more beer with the seal. Yep. So, but yeah, and I know there's been criticism of the image. I think we did a pretty good job.
I think my note on that is I like the image by itself. I think is all right. What I love, I think the monochrome, like the black and white, that straight version, I think that looks really great in packaging. I think it works very well in context, and that was I think missing a bit from the announcement. The colored version that's on the tap talkers, that's on the t-shirts, that's on that version. I think people were struggling to picture that on a beer label. But the examples, I think Wayward's already shared some examples online, and Stomping Ground have.
Yeah. I think most people are going to use the monochrome version, and the monochrome version looks great on a fridge, just in white. It looks awesome. You know, our brief was, it had to say beer.
Mm-hmm.
It had to say independent.
Yep.
Right. And, like, we looked at lots of different complicated versions.
I think the other thing, it has to be small. Like, it has to be able to be legible when it's small. And
that's,
I think,
right.
That's,
you know, when you shrink this down to 12 millimeters high, which is the minimum.
Yeah.
It's pretty hard to read anything, right? So it's got to be very, very legible, very simple. Mm-hmm. And look, at the end of the day, it might not be to your personal taste, but I don't think it's offensive.
No.
The US came under a lot of criticism because theirs is actually needs to be quite large.
Yeah, I think that the US's one is clever looking, but it's not necessarily intelligent design in context.
Yeah,
so that's
look, and at the end of the day, it only has to serve a purpose to identify to the consumer that this is independent. You know, the consumer is not going to look at a beer, look at that logo, and go, "I don't think I like that logo, so I'm going to put the beer back." It's not going to happen, right? Mm-hmm. They just need to go, "Yep, I recognize that, and it's out there, it's done, it's finished." You know, people have been saying, "Oh, it needs a bit of work." Well, it's not going to be worked on. It's done.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. You don't introduce a logo and then start changing it.
I think the needs a bit of work. That's people who've just seen the colored version, and I just don't think they're seeing the full context.
Perhaps. Well, hopefully that's true. I mean, and you know, as somebody who's lived with that design for the last 4 months, because that's really been how long it's been since we kind of finalized it. It bears the test of time. You know, I look at it now 4 months on and I don't cringe or I don't grumble. I think it's good. It's still good.
Yeah.
And I think it'll grow on people.
Yeah. And I think the most important thing, I think, is seeing it in context. And there were a few, there was a long thread on CBC on Facebook. And there were a few examples shared in there, and I thought they all looked great. Like it was,
Any more to say?
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I think that, you know, just as a shameless plug for the IBA, you know, I think that people need to get involved. You know, this is our association. I think that the board has a really strong commitment to getting members involved. You know, the SEAL was probably the first example of that. But now we have a quality program that I think Padden is heading up, which is absolutely fantastic. And there's some really cool stuff happening there.
Yeah, cool.
Ben from Endeavor and Ben from Bridge Road are looking at member services, so getting discounts and helping small breweries get established and, you know, business planning and forecasting and helping out with that. So
I've seen some safety programs as well. Yep, that's safety, really important.
Yeah. So stuff like that, I think we're really just, IBA is hitting its straps, and with, you know, the appointment of Alexis Reutemann, who is an absolute dynamo. She is amazing.
Yeah.
She's going to do great things for this industry. So it's pretty exciting. And, you know, if you're a small brewer, I think your $1,000 a year is going to be repaid many, many times over with what's happening.
Cool.
Awesome. Before we go into break, why don't we talk about the two beers that we've
had. It's been a great discussion, but we've been enjoying
some quietly sipping.
So the first one we had was Wayward's new beer to guard. What was the name again?
Garda de Vida.
Yeah.
I didn't name this one. So it's this is I kind of call it a more modern interpretation of Beer de Garde than perhaps our Raconteur was.
Yeah.
You know, Raconteur is big, ballsy, very complex.
Mm-hmm.
This is a simpler beer. It talks to you very quietly. So I think it's got that really nice rounded ester profile. But you tell me. But
It was I really enjoyed it. It had that it wasn't overly sweet like some Beer de Gardes can be, but it had that touch of sweetness.
Yeah.
The esters were absolutely present, but not overpowering.
It was incredibly drinkable because I smashed mine
very quickly for 7% as well. Yeah. It was
I mean I think I compared it with you to Toimont.
Yeah.
And to me, you know, Toimont is a great example of a modern Beer de Garde. It's one of my favorite beers ever, and I can smash huge quantities of Toimont until I fall down. and I think that's exactly what this beer is delivering. So we're still going to do Raconteur because that beer is a really soft spot in my heart.
It's a great beer, wasn't it?
It was one of our, I think it was perhaps. It was probably our first seasonal that we ever did, but way back at Riverside.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
a lot of history there.
Mm.
But and then the second one is Chief Hopper's Copper Drop, which is, you know, it's kind of an Udbrunn, but you know, I mean, it's not probably a traditional Udbrunn.
No, it's been on tap here for a while, and it's always a one that's fun to go back to every time. And it's it's definitely got those kind of Udbrunn, Flanders Ready sort of characters,
like balsamic vinegar type sourness,
But sort of very low acidity. I think for the
I think that's kind of our hallmark is that approachability
of
styles. I mean, I had a couple of friends of mine in the bar yesterday, and they are absolutely not sour guys.
Yep.
And they went, "Oh, I want to try that Chief Hopper's Copper Drop." And I'm like, "Okay, well, you know, you don't need to love this, you know?" And they drank like three of them because they loved it.
I mean, that's what I love. I love this style. I love Udbrunns, Flanders Reds, because they have that acidity, they have the tartness, but they also have a bunch of malt sweetness backing it up.
Yeah.
And I think it's a much more balanced sour than other sort of styles.
Yeah.
And it is one that I think, like I've introduced a lot of people to sour beers via Rodenbach Grand Cru, and they've, you know, fallen in love with it. Because how can you not?
Oh, no, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Shout out to Jackson for bringing us that second beer, by the way. Thanks, mate.
Alrighty. Well, let's take a quick break.
Yep.
Cool. Yeah, awesome.
Sessionable.
Hey, everyone. It's Adrian here, letting you know that Sessionable is coming back to the Victorian High Country this June for the Darker Days Festival. So last year was pretty awesome, and this year it's set to be even bigger and better. Bright Brewery are building from the success of the inaugural festival and promise to bring you more of everything for Darker Days 2. More dark beers, more food, more banter, more fire.
and Dave's Travel and Events Group have upped the game to put together a huge 3-day tour with buses leaving from Sydney and Canberra. Not only will you get transport down to Bright and VIP access to the festival, but Dave's will also sort out your accommodation for both nights, treat you to a brewer's dinner on the Friday, and take you on a grand tour of the High Country Brewery Trail. And that's just some of what's included in this great package. It's going to be epic. I'm really looking forward to it, and I hope to see you all there. Seats are limited, so secure your spot now at daves.com.au. And we're back.
We're back. And we've swapped out one member of the Wayward team for another.
Yeah, so Pete's had to go to Bunnings. That's his non-beer recommendation.
Yep.
And,
he doesn't love Bunnings.
And we're joined by Jackson.
Hello, everyone.
Who's brought us another beer to consume.
Yeah.
Mm.
What do we have, Jackson?
It's called Blackout at the Old Farmstead, and it is a dark farmhouse.
That's exactly what I'm getting from this beer.
Yep.
Mm.
Tick.
Dark farmhouse. Yep.
Yeah.
Cool.
really happy with it.
Yeah. I remember, like, I used to brew a lot of farmhouse beers back when I was home brewing because it was such an easy yeast to use.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And dark farmhouse was, like, my thing. It was, like, I had a really black farmhouse beer and it was fucking awesome, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I'm loving it because it's approaching that sort of Delirium Nocturnum.
Mm. Yes. A little bit.
Yes. Kind of corner.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
No confectioner's sugar in it, which is probably why it's like lower in alcohol, lower in sweetness. But yeah.
Yeah, no, it does finish pretty dry for a dark farmhouse, which I'm loving. Let's jump straight into recommendations, right? And we'll wrap the show up.
Yeah, so we've kind of spoiled each other in our beer recommendations. So why don't we just do our beer recommendations first?
Okay. No, we spoiled the non-beer. We haven't spoiled the beers.
Okay, no. True.
Yeah.
Why don't we do non-beer recommendations first? Yeah. So, Tom?
All right. So, mine is a TV show that I have loved for years. It's probably one of my favorites. It's an animated kids show that I think is one of the greatest TV shows ever made.
Is it Blue's Clues?
No.
No?
Avatar The Last Airbender.
Oh, yeah, okay. Is that a kids show?
Well, it's a Nickelodeon show. Yeah, and it's like of, watching... Sort
of. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Last Airbender is... But it... I don't know. It's just... I was just like... I don't know. I just was like, I want to watch that. And so, I went and procured it and have been just binging it and really enjoying it.
Yeah, cool. That's kind of been on my radar for a long, long time.
Have you seen it?
But I've never watched it. So,
neither.
I'll pass.
Well, I have the first season on DVD anyway, so I'll probably watch it. No, actually, in Blu-ray maybe.
Oh,
high tech.
Yeah.
So yeah, but if I enjoy the first season, which I'm sure I will,
it's very good. And it starts off slow, and you're kind of like and then it just ramps up. It's just one. I've probably watched it 4 or 5 times through. I love it a lot. It builds an incredible world. And
is it finished or ongoing?
No, it's finished.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so Avatar: The Last Airbender finished quite a while ago.
How many seasons?
3 seasons of Last Airbender.
Okay, that's not
and
too
then
bad.
They came out with a second series.
Yeah.
There was Avatar: The Legend of Korra, which is set sort of like 100 years after the events,
with a whole
new cast of characters, and,
yeah, cool.
Sort of takes that world even further, and that's a bit more sort of young adult, whereas Avatar's a bit more sort of like,
yeah, cool,
yeah.
So I'm going to kind of follow that up because sort of on the same note, I'm going to recommend a book, and it's called All the Birds in the Sky by Charlie Jane Anders, and it's one of those books that kind of transcends a lot of genres and age groups.
Yep.
And it's a mix between science fiction and fantasy.
Yep.
And it's kind of like the war between magic and science.
Oh, this sounds so up my alley.
And it starts off reading like a young adult novel, and then it gets very adult as the kind of story between these two main characters progresses. And it's just so fun to read as well. It's like one of those really enjoyable page turners. It's like it gets you to invest in these characters very early on, and then you just want to know what happens next. And it's such a fun story. I breezed through it. I think it won a couple of big awards as well. I'm not.
Is it recent or is it a couple of years ago? A
couple of years. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'll whack that on my Kindle.
Yeah. I think.
Note made.
Yeah.
Jackson.
it's gonna be a little bit left of field compared to those, but I'm going to recommend sort of an area of the world.
Sure.
So sort of Woi Woi, the town so nice they named it twice.
Yep.
That whole area, sort of Woi Woi, Edelong Beach, Umina Beach, Pearl Beach, Patonga, is incredibly beautiful. Mm. In peak hour school zone traffic, it's an hour and 20 from Metro Sydney, centre of town, and it's very beautiful. And there's some great venues. There's like lots of good booze to
find.
We've
been there together before.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And I really, really, really love that area of the world, and I think a lot of people drive past it and it doesn't get a lot of chop. So that's my recommendation.
Cool.
Nice.
Woi-woi. I think there's the first woi-woi recommendation on the show.
I think it might be the first mention of woi-woi on the show.
There we go.
Yeah.
There we go.
Awesome.
Should we go to beer?
Yeah, let's move on to beer.
All right. Mine is a beer that I think it might be a struggle to find now because it had a bit of a release over the last week or so.
Yep.
The Stone and Wood prequel.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Is it just gone? Expect it to be gone?
Well, like we had a keg on at the tap house and it sold very quickly. We had people coming in because they Stone and Wood listed us as a venue that had it, and I didn't have a chance to tap it until a few days after I got the keg. And in those few days, we had people coming in and asking for it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I went to bid a few like as the keg was just about to drain. And
what's the story with it?
So the story that Stone would have been saying at least is that it is sort of a rebrew of the original recipe of the beer
The prototype for Pacific Ale. Yeah.
So it's a big which I don't I'll take it in their word, but what this beer is just a big sort of modern Aussie IPA with a load of Galaxy, really clean malt bill. It was like 6-7%.
Yeah. Still like super late hop.
Yeah.
Nothing bitter about
it. It's like there's some bitterness,
but it's a bigger Pacific Ale.
Yeah.
Okay. Pretty much. And the story is they had to turn it down to kind of make it more marketable.
Yeah.
But it was basically, you know, the NEPA of the time for Australia.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And
well, people were used to rolling their Coopers across the bar and hitting or missing that process. So,
and I thought it was tasting good as well. I think like I was having this conversation with a lot of people about the prequel, and I thought, you know, Stone and Wood was our NEPA, like, and it gets overlooked a lot these days, but it ticks all the boxes, right? It's like super dry hopped. Really light on the malt, very kind of fruity
and
hazy.
Yeah.
You know, it was that beer, and it kind of gets overlooked a lot
because it's so commercial
now.
But it's still a great beer. Even just Pacific Ale, still a great beer.
Yeah, it's still a great beer.
And I think it's also Pacific Ale is one of those beers that if you were writing a beer history of Australia,
one of the major turning points.
It was,
And even, you know, you could argue in terms of international craft beer, they pioneered the use of Galaxy hops, which is massive.
Totally.
Yeah.
Shout out to Stone Wood, and the prequel was just tasting so good. Mm. And they did a really good job of getting it to a select few venues that all tapped it fresh. Mm. It was tasting really good. You know, I really enjoyed that.
Awesome. So again, kind of on a similar note to your recommendation, I'm going to recommend the All Hands Summer Ale, which is called, let me just look it up quickly, Fruit Bat Summer Ale.
Oh.
And it's if you haven't been to All Hands, they're brewing some pretty awesome beer. They're the brewery at the old King Street Brew House, and they've kind of renovated and rebranded. Awesome schmick new equipment, and they can kind of, before they were brewing some pretty good beers, but they had limited capacity to dry hop and all that stuff. And now they can just do everything that any modern brew house can do.
Yep.
And their summer ale is tasting fucking awesome. Like super fruity on the nose, not too much bitterness, clean. And because they're only brewing for themselves, they're not selling to any other venues at the moment. And they're going through a lot of their kind of easier drinking beers, especially this one, a lot. It's always fresh
when you have it there. I'll have to go check it out.
And it's so fucking good. And hopefully we can get them on the podcast
very soon. Yeah, so we're currently talking to them about that.
Yeah. So All Hands Brewing House, AHBH, it's a very cumbersome name. All Hands Fruit Bat Summer Ale.
Yeah, I also love the name because they are like in that fruit bat zone near the bridge. Mm. Like,
Get that commute it's the Sydney Park to Botanical Gardens in the summer.
And Jackson, you got a beer you've been enjoying?
So I'm currently going through my BJCP study process lead up to the exam. So I've been sort of systematically going through the BJCP from section one through to section 32.
You should do what we do and just roll the 33. Dice, you know.
Yeah, I feel like that's not a very
good way to study.
Systematic way of doing it. No, but in that, I've recently just sort of got done finalizing and scrubbing up my crib notes for sort of all the British stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And so I've been drinking a whole lot of like finding weird bottle shops. I had like old, out of date, wee heavy.
Oh, yeah.
And then
old ales and shit.
Old ales, especially. So my recommendation, if you can find it anywhere, is old, not old peculiar. Old engine oil.
Oh shit! Yes.
Yeah,
I haven't had that.
So no. And
past.
Seriously,
probably
like
a decade.
Neither had I. Yeah. Neither had I.
Is that Harveston?
Harveston.
Yeah.
I love their logo. It's a tiny little mouse with driver's glasses and a scarf.
It's so good. Like old, what a turn of the century!
Wow.
But like 6%.
Yeah.
It's like and especially with winter coming in, like it is something that I will buy again.
Nice.
Without hesitation.
I like that.
Yeah. So what's the style?
It's labeled as a black ale, but BJCP classifies it as an old ale.
Okay, cool.
In the sense that I think originally it was aged before it was released.
Sure.
Yep.
But now I think now it's probably less that.
Yep.
But it just the BJCP guidelines, I suppose, write themselves around commercial examples, and this was sort of one of the like best commercial examples going. Awesome. But it's delicious. Yeah. It's amazing. I can't recommend it enough.
I know a quick plug for the last episode of Style Roulette where I wasn't on that one, but where Brad and Liam and Adrian went through Best Bitters, I think.
Yeah.
The,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Man, how good are English styles?
Yeah.
Yeah. I know, right? British ale yeast. It's just delicious. Also, London Pride is coming out.
Yeah. In those
500ml cans, and it's being charged with nitro.
There was a lot of discussion on that.
We had
that
in the previous episode.
You did? Yeah. Okay, this has been done. Great. Yeah. Cool.
Awesome. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining us for the recommendations, Jackson.
Pleasure.
Thanks
for having
Pete, for being on the episode.
Absolutely.
About all things indie beer.
Great chat with
Pete.
Yeah.
And as always, you can find us sessionable.net is our website.
Yep.
We're on iTunes and all the podcast apps.
At Sessionable Podcast on Instagram and at Sessionable Pod on Twitter. We're on Facebook as well. If you have any comments, reach us on any of those.
Yep. We'd love to hear from you. And if you have any questions for us as well, we'd love to more than happy to answer them on the show. Alrighty. We'll see you next time. Oh, cheers. Next time's our 100th episode, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Congratulations, guys.
Thank you.
I'm a fan. Well, I'm a listener. Yeah. So on behalf
like,
of
now,
everyone.
Now the kind of anticipation is...
Yeah, we've got some big, massive, really cool things planned. Adrian's going to edit all this out.
we kind of... sure. We have things planned.
They don't need to know that we don't.
It's going
to
be great.
Yeah.
No, we kind of do. We do. We
I
do.
Know. We got some cool stuff planned.
Yeah, cool stuff. Cool
congratulations, though. Yeah. That's a serious achievement.
Thank you.
Well done.
Alrighty.
Cheers.
Cheers.